Councillor Moshagare, who is with us. CEO, Chief Executive Officer. I'm just looking here. We've also got, is Nastella Sakita here, Director of CCRD? Is she around? Is Mr. Mark DeBella around, the Chief Director, GCI? And then we've got Mr. Obed Dongwani, the Chief Operating Officer. Thank you, from the NCR. And then we've got Mr. Fundi Mlazi, Chief Financial Officer. It's Mr. You see, not Mr. All right, let's just alter that. All right, so we're going to make an immediate start then. And we do have apologies from the DDG, Ms. Lordwen Thule, from the DTI, who has other commitments as well, prior commitments to this meeting. So if we can make a start immediately, Chief Executive Officer, Ms. Montegari, because we've got quite a lot before us and we're just 15 minutes later than we expected. We're looking at the B4R protest, the annual report of yours, and that we'd like you to speak to and address. If we have time for the first quarter financial, we'll address that. But I think you've seen how we've done the process. So thank you very much. You go ahead.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm happy to have been given this opportunity to address the Honourable Members. I think, first of all, for the benefit of those members that are still new to the committee, I just want to, you know, state the fact that NCR was established under the National Credit Act, and it regulates the consumer credit industry in South Africa. Some of our key functions include registration of credit providers. We've registered more than 4,500 credit providers with about 45,000 branches countrywide. We've registered, we also regulated counselors, these are individuals who assist over-indebted consumers. To date, we've registered 2,100 debt counselors, and we also regulate credit bureaus. In that effect, we have registered 13 credit bureaus. We remain as NCR committed to ensuring that consumers continue to be protected whilst engaging with key stakeholders. Our priorities for the financial year 2013-2014 was in education, consumer education, enforcement, and a lot of time was also spent on the National Credit Amendment Bill, which has since been assented to by the President on the 19th of May. So it is now the National Credit Amendment Act. So we really spent a lot of time in that year, you know, around issues, including the removal of adverse consumer credit information, generally known as the amnesty. Now, in terms of enforcement, we do both proactive and reactive enforcement. In terms of proactive enforcement, action that we have taken. We raided micro-lenders in about three provinces in the year. We also revisited Marikana, because last year we did visit Marikana, but we decided to go back to, you know, after the strike to see what was happening. And it is fitting to note that in terms of the retention of ATM cards and PIN numbers and ID books, we found that that practice has stopped. Out of the 14 credit providers that had been visited the year before, only four were found to be operational, and the others had closed their doors, either because there was no business or because, you know, the tribunal cancelled our registration because of referral that we made to the National Consumer Tribunal after our investigation. And we referred in the year about 83 matters to the National Consumer Tribunal for adjudication. Investigations that were mandated in the year about 1953. The contraventions in terms of the referral to the tribunal range from charging of excessive fees and interest by credit providers to reckless lending, to the retention of bank cards and PINs. And in terms of consumer education, we conducted workshops to the provincial consumer affairs offices, you know, countrywide. We ran workshops with the trade unions and traditional authorities. And in terms of their country, on average about 9,100 consumers apply for debt review to go under debt canceling. And it is not that, you know, everybody, you know, their application is approved. But that's an indication of how, you know, consumers feel in terms of the debt stress. Through debt canceling, an amount of 2.1 billion was distributed to credit providers by payment distribution agencies. The NCR has accredited about 3 payment distribution agencies that distribute money after collecting that money from over-indebted consumers and distribute that money to credit providers. So for that year, 2.1 billion was distributed to credit providers. From inception, because the debt review process, you know, started operating in 2007, about 18.6 billion already has been distributed. So this is an indication that, you know, debt canceling does work. We have, as one of our key milestones as the NCR, established what we call a credit industry forum, which constitutes representatives from, you know, credit providers through the Banking Association of South Africa and Microfinance of South Africa, associations of debt cancellers, association of the payment distribution agencies. And the reason why this forum was formed is really to start addressing some of the challenges that are confronted by credit providers and consumers, and to enter into consensual agreements without having to run to the DTI every time to change the act. And through this forum, we've been able, for instance, to come up with our debt assessment guidelines, which have now been passed as regulations. Oh, yeah, the deadline for submissions, submission of proposal was the 31st of August. So they are going to now form, you know, the regulations, the debt assessment regulations. And through this forum, we are also working on the review of fees and interest rates. Fees and interest rates that are charged by credit providers are kept in terms of the National Credit Act, so they are regulated. Now we are in the process of reviewing that. We have also established a learnership program. So we have within the NCR about 20 learners. These are graduate learners. We were funded by Banksita. Together with Banksita, we established this learnership program, which started 2 years ago. So every year we've been taking, you know, about 10 graduates. From this year we started, you know, youth getting 20 graduates, and we hope, you know, to continue with this learnership program going forward, provided we are, you know, able to get an additional funding. But as I said, Banksita has really come to the fore to assist us in that regard. Now, let me just go through, the presentation covers the performance against annual targets for the past financial year, which is 2013-2014. And the areas that I'm going to cover is the performance against annual targets. And if time allows, we'll go through the first quarter performance report for 2014-15, financial information and our key successes and challenges. Now, one of our strategic objectives is to promote increased access to credit through responsible credit granting. And what that means is that we conducted a study. At the NCR, the purpose of that study was really to seek to understand the depth of the microeconomic impact of the National Credit Act from the study. And the findings of the study were such that NCR had an overall, rather the NCA had an overall positive impact as brought about implementation of stringent policies by credit providers, thereby reining in credit extension, save for the high cost of credit, you know, that are just consumers. And this is evidenced by the special returns that we receive from credit providers on a quarterly basis. As at December 2012, we saw an increase in unsecured credit, for instance, a year-on-year increase of about 47%. As at March this year, that has come down to about 5%, which clearly means that there has been, you know, a contraction as far as extension of unsecured credit is concerned. Because we did raise, you know, our concerns as the NCR around the extension, the huge extension of unsecured credit as a credit product, because it's one of the most expensive credit products that has been extended to consumers. Now, Part of the findings that came out of this research was to look at standardizing disclosure of the total cost of credit. I need to indicate that we are in the process of reviewing the interest rate and fees, the caps, that are regulated. We will also be looking at including in the credit, in the credit agreement your multiplier factor, which means that for consumers to be able to compare apples and apples, they look at the application and they approach a credit provider for a certain amount of loan. They should be able to see that it's more expensive for them if they borrow it for over, a longer period of time. So we will be including a multiplier factor in this quotations. Now, the other finding was for the NCR to look at aggressive ways of, coming up with education strategies to make sure that whenever we conduct our education campaign, the messages must really address the problems on the ground. It shouldn't be just a general consumer education campaign. So if the issue around the fact that credit providers in the specific area are retaining people's ATM cards and bank cards and PIN numbers, we should start educating consumers around that. The second output there talks to the establishment of the National Register of Credit Agreements. It's a database that we had intended to establish at the NCR. This was going to be a database that was going to be used complement information that is currently retained by credit bureaus. We have since decided to halt this project, and we request the DTI to change our business plan for this year because there were other priorities that we needed to look into, and that is, as I indicated, the removal of consumer address, consumer credit information, and the national credit amendment. Because we spend a lot of time on those priorities. So we decided to pass this project. We will revisit it in the next year. The other output is around proposal of affordability assessment guidelines. I indicated that that was done, completed proposal. The proposal was submitted to the DTI. The guidelines informed the regulations which were published for comment. And the deadline was the 31st of August. The second strategic objective is to protect consumers from abuse and unfair practices in the consumer credit market and address over indebtedness. Now, to do this, we needed to produce a report on implementation of the consumer rights awareness strategy. The key focus areas in terms of that implementation plan was to look at consumer rights in general, educate consumers around that, to run education campaigns around spend wisely and borrow wisely. You may have noticed over the Christmas festive season that we put out a lot of these advertisements, either through TV, newsprint, radio, and billboards. And we continue to do that every year. We decided we should increase our referral to the tribunal, and hence we were able to refer about 23 matters in the financial year, and to conduct two credit bureau investigations. We did those investigations, and one investigation was around a company that was retaining medical information on consumers, in the sense that in instances where somebody happens to pass away or die, they disclose the cause of death, and that was in contravention of National Credit Act, but they've since rectified that. We also decided we should make more use, of one of the main enforcement tools, which is the issuing of compliance notices, and we have really done a lot of that, as you will see from the quarter report. The implementation of the stakeholder strategies really talks to the fact that we were, as a result of that, we were able to set up the credit information forum that I spoke to, to look at the forum, also looked at the affordability assessment guidelines and the review of fees and interest rates. The next strategic objective is to continually enhance consumer credit market regulatory framework. So there were those two credit bureau investigations that were conducted to look at, you know, attach collections, that's up to the registration of credit bureaus. In instances where a credit bureau operates the business of a credit bureau in terms of the Act and is not registered with the National Credit Regulator, they are contravening the Act. And also, you know, some of those enforcement action talks to the retention, you know, of consumer credit information. One of the credit bureaus that was investigated retains and sells consumer, residential rent information around rental accommodation, and we're not doing that in terms of the Act, but they've since rectified that practice. There's also the approved and implemented on-site visit guidelines. What we do normally is that to assist consumer credit providers to comply with the Act, credit providers and debt counselors, we've got what we call compliance officers and monitoring officers, and these are officers who on a regular basis, you know, would go out either proactively to, you know, to see how credit providers are operating, and or through information that we receive through the media, we would then send out our compliance officers to go and, you know, inspect the operations of certain credit providers. We conducted about 12 such on-site visits in the year. The last strategic objective is around monitoring and improving NCR's effectiveness in fulfilling its mandate. It's really around, you know, making sure that we improve our service delivery to consumers. We normally conduct independently, this is normally done by an independent firm that would look at the impact of our education campaigns. But also in terms of the service delivery, you know, our services to registrants, the credit providers that we regulate, the debt customers that we regulate and credit bureaus, they would independently, you know, interview a number of registrants and associations, and sometimes they even interview parliamentarians, they would interview the national, other key stakeholders that we interact with throughout the year, such as the National Treasury, the DTI, the Competition Commission, the Financial Services Board, and they would also conduct focus groups, you know, consumers, to start, you know, to ask certain questions around what they think of the NCR. So the study is really about perception of the NCR, how NCR is seen out, you know, by outsiders. So that was, and we normally did these studies each year, but you know, going forward, we decided we'd rather do it once every 2 years, because once you start implementing recommendations, they take longer, you know, for anyone to see any changes. And then you have the functional new information and communication technologies ICT project that we started developing, and we then had to halt it, as you will see, you know, in our when we present our budget. We had to hold the IT system because we felt that the service provider was charging us for services that were not rendered. They had gone live with one subsection, with one subsystem, which is the complaints department. And as soon as that subsystem had gone live, we started experiencing issues. And that's when we decided to do a health check on the whole IT system. So the project, that project is on hold. I'm done with my presentation. Perhaps what we can do is go to the financial with regards to the yearly performance before we talk about the third quarter performance report. At this stage, I will hand over to the acting CFO.
Thank you, the honourable member. Looking at our financial performance for the 2013 financial year, Chair, we're very pleased to report to this committee that we were able to maintain the unqualified opinion for the 2014 financial year. Very pleased as well to mention that we did not receive any findings on compliance relating to supply chain management. There were no findings from the Auditor General. There were also no findings from the Auditor General relating to performance information. Over and above, there's also very pleased to report that we did not have any irregular expenditure during the audit. We also did not have any fruitless and wasteful expenditure. in terms of the extra performance, I think we had a deficit for the 13-14 financial year of about 26 million at operational level. Just to remind the committee that the funding of the deficit was actually done through retained surpluses, where the approval was obtained in 2011-2012, where Treasury allowed us to retain surpluses and utilize them over a 3-year period. And that 3-year period actually, Chair, was ended during the 2013-14 financial year. Proceeding to our actual budget, for 2013-14 we're operating at a budget of 137 million, made up of an operational budget of 117 million and a capital budget of about 19 million. Comparing that to the 2014-15 budget, for operations in 2014-15 we've maintained that budget to 117 million. Capital budget has reduced to about 11 million, and Chair will note that we're currently sitting with a deficit in the budget of about 15 million. However, we have implemented measures and ways to make sure that we address and we fund the deficit, and also the deficit is also due to the depletion of the retained surplus. Because during the 3 years that we were actually utilizing retained surpluses, our annual transfer was reduced. So it's not because of an increase in operations or increase in expenditure. And since the reserves were depleted in the 2013-14 financial year, we're just maintaining the expenditure the same. But we're hoping that the 13 million deficit will be funded through the suspension of the ICT project, which is currently on hold, taking a health check. About 7 million will be funded from that. We're expecting to have savings from our human resource expenditure of about 4 million. We're also hoping that our professional fees will be able to save about 4.6 million from that, as a result of, as the CEO has highlighted, that instead of doing annual intake assessments or annual organizational assessments, we'll rather focus on implementation of the findings of search reports from the previous year, and rather do search assessments every second year. Chair, that was the presentation on the annual information. I think I will pause there because the following information relates to the quarterly financial performance.
Thank you very much. And Swandi Malazi, it's very good to see a young woman here, an acting CFO Chief Financial Officer. We've got a reputation for detail in these matters. So I'm sure we're going to be able to rely on you in this area. Right, members, I think we are probably at a point. I'm looking at the CEO, Mr. Gari, for us to address on the matter and see how time goes for the quarterly report itself. Okay. So, members, there you have it. We haven't yet addressed the quarterly, although just looking at it, it's 22:12. It's earlier than we expected. Your presentation is shorter than we expected. Perhaps you could immediately go into the first quarterly report. Thank you.
In terms of the first quarter performance report check of 2014-2015, we've got the output as increased awareness of our quality assessment regulations. This is in terms of ensuring that we promote increased access to credit through responsible credit granting. We had planned to conduct workshops in this first quarter, April to June. So we have not been able to do that. As I indicated, our quality assessment regulations were only published last month and the deadline was end of August. But then, we have not changed the annual target. It will remain as such. We will do the 9 workshops on our quality assessment regulations. And in terms of reducing the cost of credit for consumers, I did indicate that we are busy doing, we expect the exercise of looking at the current levels of the cost of credit. In the first quarter, we are required to procure the service provider to conduct such a review, and that service provider has been appointed chair. Objective is again to protect consumers from abuse and unfair practices in the consumer credit market and address over-indebtedness. As an output, required to conduct regular banking investigations, issue compliance notices and certificates where applicable. Our target for the quarter was to issue 3 compliance notices, which since issued 6 chair. Through implementation of the new strategy to combat unlawful advertisements. We've got a dedicated resources that are looking at advertisements in newspapers and magazines and billboards. And we can send out compliance notices to those credit providers, and they have come back to say they have complied. The third strategic objective is to enhance consumer credit market regulatory framework. We are required to conduct investigations and take enforcement action on 2 credit bureaus. Those investigations and enforcement action was taken. And therefore the target was met. In terms of the second output in SO3, conduct compliance on-site visits. We have conducted on-site visits, 6 on-site visits. And the next strategic objective is to improve NCR's operational effectiveness. The annual target was to implement recommendations of the ICT assessment. The assessment was conducted. We are busy reviewing the final report that has been submitted in terms of the health check that was conducted on the ICT project. And to increase the number of learners recruited and trained, as I indicated, we have 20 learners in place. That are being trained on the NCA, but they're also working within different areas in the NCR. The last strategic objective here is to ensure effective implementation of the National Credit Amendment Act. As indicated, the President assented to the National Credit Amendment Act on the 19th of May this year. And we need to make sure that we create awareness as far as these amendments are concerned. And therefore, we are required to conduct workshops with relevant stakeholders, monitor their compliance, conduct 18 radio TV interviews and so forth. And those target shares have been exceeded. But also to do, more activations. We have seen visitors places like, Kimberley, Western Cape, we've been in Mpumalanga, we've been in Limpopo, just to run those, exhibitions and more activations and outside broadcasts. We work very closely with the radio stations in that regard. Also to conduct special investigations and take enforcement action. As I indicated, we did conduct raids in Gauteng, and the other raid was done in the northwest in Marikana. The investigations will have to continue this year. We'll be looking at investigating the removal of other consumer credit information regulations. And 10 investigations on large credit providers must be done in this year. Already we have done 5 investigations on 5 entities. And we've seen that the credit providers are different, are at different levels of compliance in as far as the removal of other consumer credit information regulations is concerned. If you look at the statistical returns in as far as consumers with impact records is concerned, at the end of March 2014, we've seen that there's been a drop in the number of consumers that have impact records. We have received audited reports from auditors that were auditing credit bureaus, for instance, and we've been, you know, assured that about 3 million consumers benefited from the removal of adverse consumer credit information, known as generally known as amnesty. Now, the number of investigations conducted on unsolicited credit provision and enforcement action taken, this is also the target that we have to work on for this year. We haven't done those investigations yet, but we will make sure that the 15, you know, investigations for the target, for the annual target, is met. With that, we will move to the financial information for the quarter. I'll hand over to the acting CFO.
Thank you, Jen. I now present the financial performance for the first quarter, which is from April to June, this current financial year. Just an overview of the summary that we, on the income side, we had a total income of 45 million. Very few what we had budgeted to have of 44 million. Very pleased to announce that we actually had collected more than we had expected that we would have collected when we budgeted. So we had exceeded our budget for the quarter by 1 million. And that's mainly due to the income that we collected from our registrants. The registrants mainly is our credit providers, our debt counselors, our credit bureaus, which are registered with the NCR. And sharing also the improvements in collection or in the fact that contributed to exceeding of the target as well was due to the implementation of the NCT ruling that we had, which now allows us as the NCR to lapse the registration of registrants who do not pay their annual renewal fee. Looking at the expenditure side, I will start at the bottom, the overall. We had budgeted for the quarter that we would have spent 22.3 million. We actually spent 22.5 million, resulting into an overall over expenditure of about 259,000, translated to about 1% over expenditure, which we think is within an acceptable range. The main expenditure line item that stands out is our personnel cost, whereby we have exceeded the budget for the quarter by 732,000, which is about 4.5% rounded off, above budget. Chair, I would just like to settle the committee to say that we are still within the budget for the, you know, remaining budget for the current financial year. We have about 55 million remaining. The main reason for the variance is mainly due to filling in of vacant positions, which we had initially intended to fill them in during the second and the third quarter, but due to operational needs, as well as some of those was actually the escalation of complaints to our mother, the DDI, we had to actually recruit quicker to address, such needs in our complaints department. That was the budget at operational level. So moving over, the next slide is basically presenting the budget for our capital budget. Overall, our capital budget for the current financial year is an annual budget of 11.6, which not break it down too quickly. Out of 11.6 million, in the first quarter, we spent about 855,000. And the change is significant spending of about 10 million for the year. And the main reason, Chair, is because of our ICT projects. Out of the annual budget of 11 million, 7.7 million relates to the ICT projects, which we currently suspended, pending the results of the health check that the CEO highlighted or referred to earlier on. And the remaining portion of our capital budget is the 3.9 million, refers to our fixed asset spending, which we feel is within line, taking into account that the 3.9 is actually an annual budget, not a quarterly budget. I think that's all of it for the financial information for the quarter. Thank you, Jim.
Well, we must thank you for that. I thought we had finished. Wanted to address your successes and challenges. Was that right, Ms. Lachlan? Yes. All right.
teacher. Our inclusive center, local enforcement action, as I indicated, we referred 23 matters to the National Enforcement Tribunal. The found fines that were imposed were about 1.8 million by the tribunal, and we conducted the raids in three provinces. And in terms of education, the other has been very equivalent of more than 200 million was across all media channels. This is the amount of money that we would have paid if we had, you know, been required to pay for, you know, posting articles in newspapers. On a quarterly basis, whenever we publish our statistical information, we normally, you know, make sure that there are press releases that go out to various newspapers. Whenever we conduct our investigations, we make sure that we publicize that. So this amount came out of that. We had 49 exhibitions, activations. These are mall exhibitions and road shows. And then as I indicated, we conducted education workshops with provincial affairs offices, trade unions, universities, church groups, and tribal authorities. We've also established the Credit Industry Forum and rolled out our third leadership program. Our challenges are, you know, around funding, but we are engaging with the DEI around that. So it is in work in progress. And office space, we have not been able to, you know, fill all the approved positions because of, you know, the limited office space that we have. And as I indicated, we are engaging with the DTI, you know, around that issue. Consumer education still remains a challenge for the NCR. And I think it's important for us for this year to make sure that we concentrate on, you know, consumers in the rural areas and semi-urban areas. So that is going to be, you know, our focus area for this financial year. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much indeed. Members, we also, I'm sure many of you studied the annual report and the statutory mandate, etc. It's now over to ourselves. We've got Honourable McPherson, Honourable Elvis, Honourable Yenge, Honourable Matsantani, Honourable Nkumi, right, in that order. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to start off with your annual report in the book, and specifically relating to your board on page 44. It would appear to me that you have somewhat of an absent board at the best of times. I refer to Mr. D. D, who it would appear has not attended a single meeting since May 2013. Mr. Kumalo is not far behind him. And on your Audit and Risk Committee, also Mr. Kumalo and Mr. Ngwenya seem to be allergic to such meetings. I'd just like the CEO to comment on those glaring absenteeism relating to your board and specifically to your Audit and Risk Committee, because they are concerning. I do know that some of them are government officials and therefore not paid. But if they are not attending board meetings, surely we should ask them to move aside and appoint people who would actually be more interested in that. Chairperson, relating to the presentation given to us, one could almost expected to celebrate all these achieved targets and everything succeeded and met. But I want to comment specifically on that, because I think that the industry and what is going on there paints a very different picture to your annual report with respect to the CEO. I want to point out that, you know, to only have a target of 12 on-site visits to celebrate 14 is a bit bizarre, considering that we know that there are 4,500 credit providers and 45,000 branches, and so that seems somewhat of a drop in the ocean. On page 6, we're told that stakeholder assessment surveys are conducted and that target to be delivered is 50% positive response rate. I would say that 50% is somewhat inadequate, because it means that half of the industry is unhappy in some form or another. If you go on to page 7, it says reduce the cost of credit for consumers, and the milestone was procure the services of a service provider to conduct a review. Now, we are way past that. I'd like to know when will that be completed and provided to this committee. With respect to page 8, you talk about conduct relating to reckless investigations. You only say that 6 compliance notices were issued, but you don't say how many investigations were actually launched. I'll skip through Chairperson to the financial performance of the entity. I would just like to understand regarding the deficits of the year of 2013-2014 and why the total assets of the NCR seem to have plummeted rapidly from, I would believe that would be 64 million rand to just under 20 million rand. And when you talk about key successes, Chair, I'm wrapping up right now. I think rating 3 provinces is not a success. I think, quite frankly, that's quite firm. I'd like to know why only 3 rates were conducted in 3 provinces in an entire year. We have a total of 9. Chair, I think that this leads into my continued criticism, as you are well aware, of the department's handling or the NCR's handling of African Bank. And for me, this paints a picture of why such things are being allowed to happen, because there are such low targets being set by the NCR to actually do its job, which is, in terms of the Credit Act, a police watchdog. That's what they're supposed to be doing. And this annual report won't take anything but that. Thank you.
I know the NCR will be addressing that, but as I repeatedly said, they are not addressing the prudential matters, but part of it would come under the mandate. The Honourable Elders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, with regard to the implementation plans, the research recommendations, I would just like to know where we can find the research recommendations, and then also, and this might be matters that might have been addressed in the, and I think you alluded to that, the investigation on credit recovery, the costs incurred when people are prosecuted for being in arrears in the, on their accounts. Also, there's a matter regarding legal costs. I think that the Minister of Justice also needs to, need to attend to. But I want to know whether you have been able to liaise with him in that regard. And then also I've heard from the NCC just before you that regarding the holiday clubs, that they will be asking the NCR to address the matter on the legal process and also refer that to the tribunal, if that is going to take place. And then lastly, the complaints that you have received, can you just give us an indication what type of complaints are you receiving, and if you can list some of them from the most complaints that you get to the least? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Elders. Honourable Yenge.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Let me first appreciate Chairperson the audit opinion on the organization, and also hope that the organization will go further and improve much more and receive a purely clean audit. So there can be a problem with that. My question is around the issues on HR with regard to the staff establishment of the organization. Do you comply with the equity plans as well as in relation to basis of litigation in instances where you found some service providers on the other side of the law, or at any stage where the service providers have actually litigated the organization? Then lastly, with regard to the accessibility of the organization to rural communities, where are you based in provinces? Are you in the headquarters of provinces, or are you in regions, or how is your structure works with regard
discussed from the Auditor General. Yeah, it's some matters that have been raised by the Auditor General. Do you have any plan on how I'll conduct those? On page 50, my fund is on material non-compliance with specific matters in key legislation, is an issue that's raised. And then the number of issues of internal control, which also relate to legislation and so forth. So is there any plan to deal with this? Second question that I wanted to raise, especially is on financials also. Slide 15 and 17. You reported on slide 15 yes, and 16. On professional fees, what are these professional fees? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkongi. Honorable Mantash.
Considering the special fees board change, Ms. Marshall be desired. We've seen that this Mr. Zeji, who is said to be telling the REMCO that he never attended the same board meeting. So I require some concern with what is really happening in that board. That would be all for me for now. Just an explanation how we operate in the board level. There's been several meetings, but this city, who has not attended a single one, is tasked with the chairing of the remuneration committee. What type of a process?
Thank you very much, Honorable Montash. Is that all for this round? I'm just looking at members. Right. On that point, as you respond to this, the elusive Mr. Tidy, is it Mr. or Miss? Is it Mr. Who clearly would require a search party? But perhaps you can explain to the committee, in terms of the Act which governs this, are there any clauses which actually address this issue of recalcitrant and non-attending members? Because we certainly that would have to be a legislative issue that we may need to address. But there must be certain good governance issues. Otherwise, why set up a board and no one even bothers to attend in that instance? So, and you may mention whether or not this was reported to the executives. Thank you. Over to yourself.
Yes. Thank you, sir. The issue of the board, yesterday the executive is represented or was represented on the NGR board by the DTI and this matter was raised at that level. However, in terms of the National Credit Amendment Act, the NGR's government structure has been changed in the sense that NGR will no longer have a board, however it will have an audit committee and we are in the process of establishing that audit committee. So the board will no longer be in existence. Now in terms of the question around and concerns around the on-site visits that we have conducted, Chair, we use a number of tools in monitoring credit providers' compliance with the National Credit Act. Other than the monitoring business that we conduct, we also rely on every credit provider before they are registered, they are required to appoint either an accounting officer or an auditor who would on an annual basis submit reports to the NCR on any contraventions that they pick up, during their audit. So, and over and above that, we also rely, on the complaints that we receive from complainants. So we use a number of tools in monitoring credit providers' compliance with the National Credit Act. And in terms of when it is that the exercise on the reduction of cost of credit is going to be completed, we have a challenge because in terms of procuring the services of any service provider, we have to follow PFMA. And therefore, in our first round, after we had advertised for that service to get, you know, somebody in to run with that project, we, you know, nobody submitted a proposal. We had to go back again, you know, and then conduct the exercise. And as I indicated, we have now appointed the service provider, and we are pushing to make sure that at least by the year, by March next year, or, you know, hopefully by December, but I think by March next year, we will have at least the first report out. There are six, can I ask Chair, the Chief Operations Officer has talked to the number of investigations that were conducted in respect of six compliance notices that were issued. And I will allow the acting CFO to also respond to the, you know, the issues around the finance matter. The research recommendations, Honorable Albert, are on our website. That's where we publish our research work. The nature of complaints that we have received, most of them are around overcharging of interest and fees, and also in terms of fees that are not allowed in terms of the Act. There is one matter that, for instance, we refer to the tribunal where a consumer was charged new pay fees, and that is not allowed in terms of the Act. There are only three costs that are allowed in terms of the Act, and that is interest, initiation costs, and monthly fees. Over and above that, you know, those fees are not allowed unless they are legal, you know, collection costs. In the meantime, let me just ask the Chief Operations Officer to respond to some of those questions. Thank you, Jeff.
Before he does, I think the point that you are making about the National Credit Act, which has been assented to, that's not yet enforced, isn't that correct? Although it was assented to in May.
Perhaps it's not yet enforced.
And when do we anticipate the regulations that close off? I've heard you say public hearings now. When is that process coming to an end? When can we, what kind of timing are we looking at for the new National Credit Act becoming into force, as it were?
So can I ask the DTI gentleman to respond? I mean, we understand that the proclamation is going to be signed any day, but I don't know whether it's got a specific date. Thank you.
Over to the Chief Operating Officer now, isn't it? Right, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. Prior to talking the question of the number of raids or investigations conducted by the NCR, I would like to provide some, you know, background information to committee officials, those committee members that were not part of this house in the previous year. And I just want to remind the committee that the NCR is a very young organization. By June 2014, it turned only 8 years. And it has a very responsibility in that it's been mandated to investigate a well-entrenched, all established risks and environment. Now, the implementation of the National Credit Act was done in phases in terms of the principles of law. In 2006-2007, the main focus area was for registration of registrants, trade providers, trade bureaus, and everybody else. So after that, it was only then that the enforcement provisions of the Act came into being. Now, prior to enforcement of the Act, the NCR had conducted educational awareness, pre-providers, because it had been unfair to beat them with the big stick without having educated them about the provisions of the Act. One of the biggest challenges that they confronted with when the enforcement provisions of the Act hit in was the fact that the industry, well-resourced, was prepared to take on the NCR legally, so with certain provisions of the Act that were taken to court because they were ambiguous. Why? As far as definition is concerned, an NCR was forced, for example, to be a declarator in the matter of the NCR, the President Bank, and all the other four banks. So, sort of clarity on, you know, on many issues that they raised when we wanted to, you know, to enforce the Act on that. And this was a big thing in disguise for NCR because it assisted us to identify the lacunas or the gaps in the Act, and therefore we embarked on the amendment process of the legislation
you know, to close it again. Now, as far as investigations are concerned, NDR conducts this raid together with other, you know, government entities, such as South African Service, your SASAs and all this in there. What normally happens is that prior to embarking on the raid, and our guys go out on intelligence gathering information to identify possible contravenors of the law in the respective provinces. Now, when we're talking about three provinces or three raids that were conducted, it doesn't mean that we raided only one credit provider. As they would go to an area, like for example, in the Northwest, we went to the Rustenburg town, we went to the Marian and other towns in the area. When we took in Gauteng, we talked about other cities and townships and so forth. But the challenge as well is, after conducting, you know, raiding a few of these particular contravening entities, which quickly goes down, and you will find that most of them then close up, and we have to continue with the raid. The other aspect is that after the raid, we need to come back and file papers with the tribunal, for example, to apply for the cancellation of registrations of some of them, and this has really happened. In certain instances, bad teams and cuts and social cuts were detained, the police were involved, and some of the credit providers were arrested and taken to court. So we have to pursue the court processes as well. NCR has to go and testify in those criminal cases of those 15 credit providers that have been charged accordingly. So it's not that we focus on just the issue. The intention is that we are going to go into all the nine provinces, because even in the previous year, we have gone to other provinces. We have been to KZN, we have been to the Western Cape, we have been to all others. So, unfortunately, in one quarter, we cannot access, you know, all the nine provinces. But if you look at the bigger picture, our intention is to cover the entire country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much on that. Do you want to add to it, CEO?
Yes, Chair, before I hand over to the acting CFO, there was a question that was asked around where are we based. We are based in Johannesburg, in Midrand, and we rely on other, you know, existing structures to carry out our functions. As I indicated, whenever we conduct our risk, for instance, we do that in partnership with the police. And whenever, you know, in terms of consumer education, what we do on a regular basis is that we have meetings with the provincial consumer affairs offices to educate them on any new, you know, amendments, for instance, in the Act, so that, you know, consumers who live in those areas can approach those offices directly without, you know, necessarily coming to the NCR. But they are here when you would really be. As well, if we were to start, we were thinking about setting up satellite offices, maybe to start off in two or three provinces. But that is, you know, a plan for future years. Thank you. And in terms of cases of litigation, there's no service provider who has litigated, you know, this year.
I'd like to respond to the questions which were raised regarding the financial information. The first question that was raised was why the deficit for the year was so high. I think the deficit for the 2014 financial was around about 26 million. Just to highlight that the only major development that took place in our operations which affected the deficit is that we had to implement a ruling which was issued by the NCT regarding the lapsing of registration of registrants who are not paying their renewal fee. And that amounted to about 10 million. And Auditor General has also referred to that in their audit report under the emphasis of the matter. It is not adverse, but it's just to highlight and make the readers of the financial statement, you know, aware that we actually implemented a ruling by the NCT. But there's nothing adverse about it. It's basically highlighting that we, as a result, we measured the revenue that we make or that we receive from registrants in a different way. The second question that was raised was with regards to why our fixed assets are increased significantly. I'd like to refer the committee to page 71 and 72, but I would also highlight at high level the main reason for the increase. In our fixed assets share was due to the ICT project that we have been with. significant figures increased in the 2012 and 13 financial year, amounting to about 11 million relating to the ICT project. If you look on page 71 alone, under the column that says additions, and the last line item there under 2013, the additions column, we have about 6.5 million that relates to the hardware that we had to acquire in order for us to be able to develop this software system. Similar to us for the 13-14 financial year is about 2.5 million. That is only the hardware only. Over and above that, on page 77, under the additions column as well, there's an item that is called computer software. It's about 1.2 million in 2014 and about 3.9 million in 2013. That is the software that we had to be purchased in order for us to be able to start with the development of the ICT system. So that contributed significantly to the increase in our net asset value. The other question related to the action plan. That is on page 50, that was reported by the Auditor General. If I recall, Chair, the findings relating to internal controls that were reported by the Auditor General were relating to asset management. Just to comfort the House as well, is that the findings were administrative in nature, but yes, there are still internal control weaknesses. Management has implemented an action plan to make sure that those are addressed. But also to highlight that it was the first time since the creation of the NCR that we actually conducted a full fixed asset verification exercise without any findings from the AG, where management proactively embarked on, you know, on that exercise. As Chair, what we have done as well as required by our mother body, the DTI, we've also submitted to the minister, to the DTI. Action plan, which is also being monitored by DTI on a quarterly basis. The other question that was asked relates to the slide that is currently on to say what is the surely fitting on professional fees, that makes us professional fees, on our quarterly information. Professional fees that we have, about 80 to 90% of it consists of legal fees because we're a regulator. So most of the time after conducting rates, and we need to take those matters to the tribunal, and we have to get attorneys to represent the NCR. So that's normally a significant portion of our operational expenditure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then we just want to hand over to the DD. We're looking at the just make sure we have right person here, a prudent system town who says right, so that Ms. Honda, Mr. Irvin we've had, but Mr. Mark Tabella, is that right, the chief director?
Yes, that's correct, Chair. Thank you. I would like to address two issues, honorable chair and members. One being the issue of the regulations. This is a process that is at an advanced stage, and you will notice that the Amendment Act also provides for the President to issue a proclamation for the effective date. So those are the processes that are currently being finalized, but we will then provide a written response to confirm the correct date that the Act will come into effect.
You see, thank you very much for that. The concern that we have is this Act would be a sharper instrument to address the sort of risk lending and so on, and the challenges that we are currently confronted with, because that's why it was in fact amended in order to bring this down. So we are concerned that it is becomes effective as soon as possible to give you the sharp instrument to carry it out. And while we acknowledge the work you did do with African Bank from 2011 to period of 2014, etc., nevertheless, it is something we may wish to look at again to see what other measures we may be able to, or instruments we may be able to develop to assist you in that regard. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chief Director.
Thanks. I have the second issue on the bond in relation to page 52 of the annual report. I just want to clarify something. So what appears in the annual report, honorable members, is not number of meetings. This is a reflection of payment made to members. So hence, Mr. Dubetsidi appears as somebody who didn't receive any payment, because he represents the Minister of Finance. Ms. Nwalo represents Minister of Social Development. Nechitenge represents Minister of Trade and Industry, and Ngwenya represents Minister of Men's Agreement. None of them received payment. Hence, it appears as having dash. It's not a number of meetings that you're supposed to have attended. Then the other issue on the board, just to allay the fears of the members. The shareholder has noted the manner in which now the board was sort of, a bit absent, starting from February, actually, when they realized that the amendment bill at that time was proposing for their removal. So since February, March, April now, it was difficult for the board to still, meet. So the CEO did escalate the matter to the minister. And what we did in the absence of the legislation coming into effect, to sort the legal opinion as to how can we deal with that matter. So what happened since then, 2 months ago, has been to inform the entire board members that their term has ended, and now the power that previously rested with the board were devolved in terms of Section 49 of the PFMA as accounting authority now to the CEO. So as we speak now, the board is no longer in existence, so the power now with the CEO. So we have strengthened the oversight mechanism for Department 5 in terms of how the CEO reports to the minister directly. Thank you.
So that, but yeah, members, we need to keep this in mind with other boards. It's very, very important with governments. The boards, you know, this, we understand what's happened here, but this may not be the first time a board is superseded by some other structure. And what measures are in place to deal with this? You can't just have a collapse because a new act hasn't come into force, etc. So I think it is something we need to keep in mind for how we address this in the future, not simply for the National Credit Regulator, but for all other entities as well in this regard. So just as well we've been alerted to this challenge. Honourable Mantash?
Second, what the Honourable Speaker was saying in as far as attendance of board, my question was referring to attendance, not payment, which is reflected on page 44. It's no payment, but it's attendance. You can't attend an apology for payment. I know what I'm talking about. So, I'll be good at attending.
Thank you very much. If you can just re-emphasize, Ms. Matsugari, why Mr. I would assume there were apologies handed in. Now, exactly why didn't Mr. Edie attend, who represents finance? That's what you just said. Critical member.
The explanation that was given to the chair of the board was that, you know, he had other commitments, but he did render tender an apology.
Yes, Honorable Liyenge.
No, Chair, can we be given a clear information about this? We are dealing with an annual report here. So we are talking to work that has already been done. Whatever is going to happen in future with regards to the report does not stop us from engaging you on what you have done in the past. If this chairperson of the board was not attending meetings, how many meetings? What then are the financial implications of that? Has he been paid for being a member of the board? So the second part is that, is there anything that has got to do with payment when one attends a meeting? How are they paid? That's the gist of the matter, in as far as I'm concerned. But I would want to know, if a board is dysfunctional, definitely it is as a result of the head that is not there.
I think we just need to clarify something, Honourable Ian. He was chairing the Remuneration Committee, not chairman of the board, and as a full member of the public service,
because he represented the Department of Finance, he would not receive any remuneration. This was according to law, because he is a member of a department. So he represented finance there. And I say that is the serious issue, that he represented finance and didn't attend. So it wasn't a question of the remuneration in his case, because he doesn't, no member of the public service would receive a remuneration for sitting on a board. But you're quite right about the attendance per se. But just to indicate, that is exactly why in the new act, which is not effective yet, that board was replaced. But at the time, apart from, and I think this is relevant, apart from simply reporting it, was there any other measure you could have taken and did not take?
What we can do, then I can go back to the acting chairperson and come back to you in writing regarding that matter. Thank you.
For the future, because we are all learning a lesson here, I think, and this is the the value of what Honourable Yenge has also put forward and Honourable Mantash, because we can't have boards that are not functioning or effective. So thank you for that, but please give it to us in writing whatever information you can get in this particular regard. We do appreciate this, and as far as I can see, I'm looking at members, there aren't any other comments or questions, am I right? Honourable Albert?
I just want to follow up one of my questions. I'd just like to know whether, in terms of the legal costs, you're also doing any research, and whether you're biasing the Department of Justice, because you mentioned what costs can be added to any credit agreement. But then once there's a default, there's also a legal cost aspect that comes in. Sometimes, because I can't make their money now on the normal costs in terms of the law, they add it to the legal costs, and that becomes a different problem, but it's also a problem that touches upon your work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chen, I'll ask the Chief Operations Officer to respond. Thank you.
Mr. Chomwani.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. The point is well taken into account, Honourable Albert, and we will definitely factor that into the research that is going to be conducted. I forgot to answer one of your questions. I think he was talking about complaints as well. The list of complaints that we're receiving from consumers through our complaints department, they mostly complain about fees, overcharging of fees, initiation fees, service fees, interest, and all that and so forth. So it's a matter of concern for us, indeed, and that's why. Yeah, of the fact that of the view that this particular business that is going to be very, very helpful to the NGR and the business side. Thank you.
I don't know if you, I'm looking at your face, Honourable Albert, and I get the impression from that look that you don't believe you have a satisfactory answer. Can you explain why? Because perhaps it wasn't clearly understood.
I think the matter was discussed in this committee, and you might not have been privy to that discussion, so that's why you don't really know. One of the points that we discussed was the problem of adding costs to any outstanding accounts or arrears over and above that which you deal with in terms of the act, which is the initiation fee, the cost of capital, and what was the last one, I think? The type of cost that you also do, multi-service fees. Now, once an account has been handed over to the legal department, you have these legal collection agencies. Sometimes they're not even law firms. I think they sell them the book or something to that effect, and then they go and collect, and then they add these huge, crazy legal fees. It's something that falls under the Justice Department, strictly speaking. On your jurisdiction, but I think it would be good for you to liaise with the Justice Department as much as this committee has to do that, to try and curtail those costs as well. As the nature of this industry, where there's a curtailing of costs or a cap on costs, they will try and push things somewhere else where there's still a loophole, and we must close all those loopholes. Thank you.
You remember this was raised when we did the amendment, these costs, and I think there was a commitment by yourself, Ms. Montegari, that you would try and engage, and also minister, refer to the minister for executive engagement in this particular regard. All right.
I thought I should just alert you. The act which is still in force, not the one that we're all waiting for, which has been assented to, but it needs an effective date. It makes it very clear here that under clause 22, that such a person may resign, giving 1 month's notice, or less with the minister's permission. But a member may also, a minister, after taking the steps required, become disqualified. That if a member has become disqualified in terms of section 22 and has acted contrary to 21(2), because you know they were fit and proper sort of characteristics etc. required, or neglected to properly perform the functions of their office, which in fact is attendance is one of those functions. Before removing the person from office in terms of subsection 3, the minister must afford the person an opportunity to state a case in defence of their position. So, the minister may remove a member of the board appointed in XYZ if the member has been disqualified under those terms. So that was the case, but I think what happened is we found that that was not sufficient. Hence, the board was replaced by another structure in a new act. So I think that that's quite relevant to keep in mind, because all of us, thank you to you, Ms. Madalani, we can't remember every clause as we sit here. I'm sure those of you lawyers yourself, you have to just go through your books, but we can't allow boards just to sit and then not worry about membership per se. So we've now addressed that one. I'm glad that we are currently getting a new act coming in, and we'll take some of the challenges which we found with respect to boards and membership on board for the other entities who do have boards operating per se. Now, we appreciate your attendance here and the engagement, but I must say to you, as CEO, that we are going to be having a few more regular engagements with yourself, and also looking at your finances, etc. It wasn't very clear whether or not you needed more funds, whether there was adequate resources. Perhaps the correct word to use would be resources rather than funding. And maybe you can put that in a written response to us as well. Of course, that doesn't mean you'll be getting any, but it means it's under consideration for the next financial year. All right. I'm sure we are finished now. I see a few people smiling, waiting for us to stand up. So thank you very much, honourable members. Just to remind you, though, about tomorrow. Tomorrow is a joint meeting, which happens from time to time. And in this joint meeting, which is to do with one of our mandates, but it's also a linked mandate of science and technology. That will take place, but we are not required as trade and industry members to sit throughout 3 hours of science and technology. They have other items on their program, but we must and we should be there, as many of us as possible, at that meeting, which is taking place, where, Mr. Kilo? It's taking place in this venue, and the chairperson of science and technology will chair that meeting. So, please, yes, we are closing at 9:30. We would normally meet earlier, but I understand science and technology meet at 9:30 in this venue. Then we do have a meeting on Friday, our own meeting, and that, as we know, is at 8:30. And where's that venue? It's also here. I'm appealing to members to please come to that, because we sometimes are very short of members due to ill health and issues of that kind of nature. So thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you, honourable members.